We all deserve some yay in our day. So say hello to Hello. Hello makes oral and personal care products that add wonder to your routine, like a toothpaste that makes brushing fun for kids. It's called Unicorn Sparkle Toothpaste. It tastes like rainbows and sunshine, works brilliantly, and it's fun. So it's pretty much magic. And for the adults, Hello Anti-Plaque and Whitening Toothpaste, which is just as good without the unicorns. Visit HelloProducts.com and let Hello add some everyday yay into your life.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
There's a time and a place for Filet-O-Fish. But breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
You're listening to live courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
You are unmuted.
Okay. All right, why don't I see counsel at sidebar?
Please be seated. This court is in session.
Tony, do you want me to come up? Please, bring them all. All rise to the jury, please. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All persons having anything to do before the Honorable Beverly Cannoni, the Justice of the Superior Court, holding in Dedham within and for the County of Norfolk. Draw near, give your attendance, and you shall be heard. God save the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. This court is in session. Please be seated.
All right. Good morning again, counsel. Good morning, Ms. Reed.
Good morning, jurors. I have to ask you those same three questions. Were you all able to follow my instructions and refrain from discussing this case with anyone since we left here on Friday?
Yes.
Everyone said yes or nodded affirmatively. Were you also able to follow the instruction and refrain from doing any independent research or investigation into this case?
Yes.
Everyone said yes or nodded affirmatively. Did anyone happen to see, hear, or read anything about this case since we left here on Friday?
No.
Everyone said no or shook their heads. Thank you very much. All right, Mr. Brennan, your next witness, please.
Your Honor, I understood that the defense informed they were still on cross-examination.
I'm sorry.
I got nervous.
I thought that we were done with that witness.
No, I had said to cut me off so that we could end early, but no, I haven't worked it.
Okay, I didn't know that. I'm glad Mr. Brennan knew that. All right, come back in, Ms. Knowles, please.
Ms. Knowles, I'll remind you, you're still under oath. Thank you.
Thank you.
Morning. All right, Miss Giannetti.
Good morning, Ms. Knowles.
Good morning.
Ma'am, on Friday, you testified to this jury about the fact that the Mass State Police Crime Lab is accredited as a forensic lab, correct?
Yes, I did.
And you discussed the fact that as a forensic chemist for, you help to ensure compliance with the lab's administrative policies, quality assurance, and control requirements, and making sure that you're complying with accreditation standards, correct?
Yes, that's one of my job duties and responsibilities.
You also acknowledge that in contrast to the accreditation standards of your forensic lab, the standards of a hospital lab may be different, correct?
I have no direct knowledge of what the standards at a hospital are, and so I can't say whether they're the same or if they're different. I'm just unfamiliar with them.
Okay. And you're unfamiliar with the standards at Good Samaritan Hospital, correct?
Correct. I have no direct knowledge of their accreditation status or requirements or body.
And you know that they were the ones to do the blood draw in this case, correct?
That's consistent with the medical records I had available for review prior to preparing my report.
And you cannot vouch for that ethanol testing, correct?
Correct. I have no direct knowledge of the accuracy or reliability. My calculations are solely based on the results of the Good Samaritan lab.
For instance, you don't know how the arm was prepared when the blood was drawn?
Correct. I was not present, and I have no knowledge of the policies and procedures of blood draw at Good Samaritan Hospital, nor this case specifically.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. excuse me. You can't vouch for the tubes and vials that Good Samaritan uses?
Correct. I cannot.
Are you aware that there was a recall on certain tubes and vials because there was a contamination determined by the manufacturer?
Sustained.
You can't vouch for how Good Samaritan stores, preserves, and assures the integrity of its equipment, correct?
Correct. I have no direct knowledge of those topics.
Now, excuse me. At your lab, you do both a screening test and a confirmatory test, correct?
Yes, that's accurate.
The confirmatory test is a second and separate test. You rerun the same sample again, correct?
Depending on the type of samples that are submitted and the facts of the case, we will either use the same sample that screened positive or that sample as well as another to run duplicate analysis and compare them. It depends on the materials available and the nature of the case.
Understood. So you do that to ensure that there's no error in the testing, correct?
It's part of many of the steps involved to ensure accuracy and reliability of the results that are reported.
And you realize that when you're doing this testing, because you're a forensic lab, you may ultimately be testifying in court, and you want to make sure you get it right, correct?
Yes.
And the confirmatory test acts as a fail-safe against false positives, for example.
Correct. The screening and the confirmatory test are typically using different methodologies or different techniques to ensure that a false positive under one technique would not have similar issues with the confirmatory technique.
Okay. In this case, your lab did not do any confirmatory testing, correct?
My lab did not have samples submitted for this individual to perform testing on.
You know of no confirmatory testing that was done by Good Samaritan, correct?
I don't know what their policies and procedures are and if the results on the report were the results of confirmatory testing or otherwise.
You just have to assume the accuracy of the testing that they did do, correct?
I used the results that were reported on the medical records provided to perform calculations.
And you cannot testify that the testing done at Good Samaritan meets your accreditation standards, correct?
Correct.
Now, your lab does whole blood testing, does it not?
If whole blood is submitted for a case, then we will test whole blood. If serum or plasma is the only available sample appropriate for testing, then we will proceed with testing on serum or plasma.
Whole blood testing leads to more accurate readings of the percentage of alcohol in somebody's blood, correct?
Correct. If you would like to know the percentage of alcohol in someone's blood, the best sample to test would be their blood.
And you've learned through your training and experience that
Many hospitals, including Good Samaritan, use a different method of testing than whole blood testing, correct?
Yes.
Good Samaritan uses serum or plasma testing as opposed to whole blood testing.
I'm not familiar with their specific technique or methodology. I haven't undergone training for their methods, but it is my understanding that this type of sample used for their method is serum or plasma.
Now, whole blood includes plasma, but it also includes white blood cells, platelets, and red blood cells, correct?
Correct. Typically, we describe serum or plasma as the liquid portion of blood, and the other cellular components that you described typically are removed or separated before testing.
Plasma has a higher water content than red blood cells, white blood cells, or platelets, right?
Yes, it is.
Alcohol is highly soluble in water, is it not?
Yes.
So alcohol has a better affinity with water, is that fair to say?
Yes.
That means that alcohol prefers to distribute into the more watery components of blood, correct?
Yes, that's accurate.
And that also means that alcohol is found in higher concentrations in serum and plasma testing than in whole blood testing, correct?
That's correct. That difference in water content is the basis of the serum conversion that I described on Friday.
Okay. So a lab like Good Samaritan's, that in this case did serum or plasma testing, will therefore provide results of blood alcohol concentration that are higher than what the true blood alcohol concentrations are, correct?
The serum alcohol or plasma alcohol concentrations that they report on their medical records would be higher than the corresponding blood alcohol concentration. That's correct.
So to translate the Good Samaritan results into a more accurate reading of blood alcohol content, you need to convert the serum and plasma results to what those results would be in whole blood testing, correct?
I'll allow it. Can you answer it as stated?
Yes. The accuracy of the value isn't changed by the reading. It's a different value. It's a serum or plasma alcohol concentration versus an estimated blood alcohol concentration. So, if it is helpful or relevant to know what the whole blood analysis would have been if the testing had been performed on whole blood, then that conversion, starting with the serum alcohol or plasma alcohol concentration, is helpful to do.
But to calculate a precise conversion rate, you'd first need to know precisely the amount of water in somebody's blood, correct?
The range of serum factors or serum conversion factors that are used in the preparation of my report and the calculations that I performed accounts for total body water variation from individual to individual. The reason I use between 13 and 19% and not just one single value is because I don't know the specific conversion factor that would be appropriate for an individual when I have medical records to review.
I think that was a long way of saying yes to my question, right? My question was to calculate a precise conversion rate for somebody, you'd first need to precisely know the amount of water in that person's blood, correct?
Sustained. Ask it differently, Ms. Giannetti.
Is it scientifically possible to predict with accuracy a precise conversion rate for one individual person?
Yes.
Everybody has a different amount of water in his or her blood, correct?
There is a normal variation between individuals.
I'm going to do my best to ask yes or no questions, and then if there's an explanation, Mr. Lally can stand up afterward and have you explain, but
so
this will go more quickly.
No comments, just go ahead and ask a question.
Sure. Everybody has a different amount of water in his or her blood, correct?
Yes.
And there are a number of factors that influence the amount of water in somebody's blood, correct?
Yes.
What is hematocrit?
I don't know.
Hematocrit is the percentage of red blood cells in whole blood cells. Do you know that?
Sustained.
Are you aware that individual hematocrit can vary and that it affects the water content in blood?
Sustained.
Would somebody's age be a factor in determining the amount of water in their blood?
I don't know.
Could somebody's gender affect the amount of water in their blood?
Yes.
Could when somebody had eaten and what somebody had eaten before the blood was drawn affect the amount of water in their blood?
It's possible, but I'm not aware of those factors being considered when performing total body water calculations.
Would how frequently a person uses the restroom affect the amount of water in their blood?
As it would relate to their state of hydration, it's possible, but again, I'm not familiar with performing precise calculations on individuals. It's not a routine part of my job, and it's not in the scope of my expertise.
Would some medications potentially affect the amount of water in somebody's blood?
It's possible, yes.
And conversion factors vary significantly between individuals, but they can also vary within the same individual over time, can they not?
I believe so, yes.
And all of the factors that we've discussed that you've adopted can impact the conversion factor that is used, correct?
Yes.
And there is no one universally agreed upon conversion factor, correct?
Correct. There is a range that right. is agreed upon, but not a singular conversion factor.
Right. And the range that you used was 1.13 to 1.19, correct?
Yes.
You recognize, however, that with all the factors affecting the amount of water in somebody's blood from person to person, and even within one person over time, some people can fall outside the range that you used, correct?
Yes.
And you recognize that some studies have shown a conversion rate from serum to whole blood can be higher than 1.19, correct?
Yes.
Are you aware of a study by Rainey, R-A-I-N-E-Y, reporting conversion rates as high as 1.59?
Yes.
And if the conversion rate is higher, that would mean that the actual blood alcohol concentration would be lower, correct?
Yes.
So if you're using a range of conversion factors that does not capture what the conversion factor should be for the individual that you're testing, you can't have confidence in the result, correct?
Correct. The range that is utilized is looking at studies of large groups of people to try to capture as accurately as possible most individuals in the population, but it would not cover 100% of scenarios with all the factors that you've described.
Okay, and you'd agree that your conversion of serum to whole blood here is imprecise, correct?
The conversion was performed within the policies and procedures of the laboratory and the best practice recommendations for my field.
But it is imprecise.
Can you repeat the question?
Let's move on. The conversion from serum to whole blood did not end the calculations that you needed to do in order to testify here today, correct?
Correct.
The conversion from serum to whole blood only translated what Ms. Reed's blood alcohol supposedly would have been, or was, I'm sorry, at the hospital at 9:08 a.m. on January 29th of 2022, correct?
Yes.
You were asked to try to find out what her blood alcohol level would have been 7 or 8 hours earlier, closer to midnight or sometime between midnight and 1 a.m., correct?
The time utilized for my calculations was 12:45 a.m.
So you started with the results that you obtained from your serum to whole blood conversion, right?
Yes.
Which was an imprecise calculation?
Which was intending to cover the majority of population.
But was it imprecise?
It followed the policies and procedures of my laboratory.
What was the precise number then? Was there a precise number or was it imprecise?
The range?
I'm not talking about a range. I know that you'd like to say that. Was there a precise number, ma'am?
The results of my report was not a single number. Okay. It is a range of numbers.
Let's move on, Ms. Giannetti.
Yes. Then once you get that range, you have to do an extrapolation on top of that to figure out what the blood alcohol concentration would have been at 12:45, 7 or 8 hours earlier, correct?
Yes.
But in order, in order to do that extrapolation, you need to make assumptions about things that you do not know, correct?
Yes.
In terms of processing alcohol, there is an absorption phase, a plateau, and an elimination phase, correct?
Yes, that's accurate and consistent with my understanding.
And during the absorption phase, blood alcohol concentration can be rising, correct?
Yes.
And to determine whether somebody is in the absorption phase or the elimination phase, you need to know when their last drink was, correct?
Yes, if you're performing that type of calculation, or if you're trying to determine if they've reached their maximum, that would be helpful information to have.
The longer the time between the last drink and the test, the more variability and potential for error there is in the extrapolation, correct?
Can you ask the question again, please?
In this case, you assumed that Ms. Reed's last drink was at 12:45 a.m., correct?
No, the calculation assumed for the maximum calculation that no alcohol had been consumed between 1.5 and 2 hours prior to that time interval start at 12:45 a.m.
Okay, and the test wasn't until 9:08 a.m.?
Yes.
The range that you came up with was 0.14 to 0.28%, correct?
Yes, 0.14 to 0.28 grams per cent.
And that was a very wide range, was it not?
It certainly is.
0.28 is double 0.14?
Yep.
And that range is so wide because there are a lot of unknowns about the way each person individually processes alcohol, correct?
There's a lot of interpersonal differences, that's correct.
There are a lot of different factors that would impact somebody's blood alcohol content, correct?
Yes.
What somebody had to eat can impact their blood alcohol concentration, correct?
The contents of their stomach or what they had eaten recently does not impact the rates of elimination that I use for my calculation, but it can factor into the absorption part of the curve and can impact that maximum amount that's reached.
Okay. Their body weight can impact their blood alcohol concentration, correct?
Correct. Again, it would not necessarily, or it could be included in the rate of elimination range that I use for my calculations. The person's body weight has more to do with, again, the absorption, the maximum concentration, the first parts of the curve, and not the elimination portion. That we're discussing when we're doing retrograde extrapolation.
And the first word of your answer was correct, right?
Yes.
A person's metabolic rate can impact their blood alcohol concentration because different people metabolize alcohol at different rates, correct?
Yes.
In addition, regarding the timing of the last drink, you were not with Ms. Reed on the late evening of January 28th or the early morning of January 29th of 2022, correct?
Correct, I was not.
You have no personal knowledge of when Ms. Reed had her last drink, correct?
Correct.
Were you informed that Ms. Reed was upset after 12:45 a.m. when you were doing these calculations?
I don't believe so.
Did you know, were you informed that she went to John O'Keefe's house in Canton and was the only adult in the house at that time after 12:45?
Sustained.
Are you aware of what type of alcohol John O'Keefe had available in his house at that time?
Sustained.
Were you aware that she was waiting for John O'Keefe to come home, but he never did?
Sustained.
Do you have any personal knowledge of whether Ms. Reed poured herself a drink during the hours of 12:45 a.m. and 6 a.m. on January 29th of 2022?
No, I do not.
And do you know whether she had more than one drink during those hours?
No, I do not.
Assume that Ms. Reed did have something alcoholic to drink after 12:45 a.m. Would that affect your assumptions about whether she was in the absorption or the elimination phase?
Yes, it would.
And if she did have something to drink after 12:45 a.m., what would that do to your calculations?
The foundation of my calculations would be incorrect. I would need to perform different calculations or factor in the information as it would become available and issue a different report.
Okay. So if your assumption of when she had her last drink was incorrect, you would not have confidence that your conclusions about which you testified Friday and today are accurate, correct?
Correct. There is some parts of the calculation that are intended to accommodate for unknown drinking history, but with a over eight hour time span between the time of interest and the time that the blood sample was collected, that adjustment in the calculation intending to avoid overshooting the blood alcohol concentration may or may not be enough to address that. And if new, more accurate information was available, then I would need to incorporate that in the discussion and calculations.
Right. So in answer to my question, if her last, if your assumption about when the last drink was consumed was incorrect, you would not have confidence that your conclusions are accurate today.
Correct.
Now, were you ever asked to determine the blood alcohol level of Brian Albert?
No.
Were you ever asked to determine the blood alcohol level of Brian Higgins?
Sustained.
Were you asked to determine the blood alcohol level of anyone except for Karen Reed in this case?
I'll allow that.
To the best of my knowledge, my only involvement with this case in my unit was the request to perform these calculations on this individual.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Lally.
Morning, Ms. Knowles.
Good morning.
Now again, how many serum conversions have you performed over your years at the lab?
It's hard to know an exact number, but at least over 100.
And the ethanol reading or the alcohol reading within Ms. Reed's medical records that you testified to previously last week, what was that reading again?
93 milligrams per deciliter.
And that reading in milligrams per deciliter, is that typical for how you would see alcohol recorded in hospital records?
Yes, it is.
And specifically hospital records that you would then be asked to perform a serum conversion on?
Yes.
Now, with respect to your calculations in this case, did you perform these calculations consistent with how you have done in each and every prior instance within your work at the lab?
Yes, the serum conversion factors have been adjusted since I first started doing these, but the same type of math was performed, and I'd used the approved conversion factors that are published in our protocols with each one that I did.
Now, what is the difference between whole blood and serum?
Whole blood is blood as we think of it with both the liquid and the cellular components as it exists in our bodies. Serum is the liquid portion of blood after those cellular components have been removed.
And how does the difference between them impact your testing or your calculations?
Because of the different water content in whole blood versus serum, that means that if we would like to compare a serum alcohol concentration and a whole blood alcohol concentration, that we have to apply a conversion factor to be able to compare those two. The serum alcohol concentration is always higher than the whole blood alcohol concentration.
And that difference, is that accounted for within the calculations or the conversion factors that you utilize?
Yes.
And how so?
The conversion factors, by dividing by 1.13 and 1.19, can adjust for the difference between the water content and therefore the serum and whole blood ratio that's observed in studies.
And that change in conversion factors, does that benefit the defendant in this case?
Objection.
I'll allow it. Or ask it differently, Mr. Chairman.
Sure. The change in conversion factors recently implemented in your lab and your protocols, who does that benefit?
The question of benefit depends on the context. Speaking to the math, dividing by a larger number means the resulting number would be smaller. So the whole blood alcohol concentration numbers would be smaller when using the current between 13 and 19% factors, as opposed to the previously used between 12 and 18% factors.
Now, these conversion factors, where again do they come from?
The conversion factors come from published studies involving individuals that consumed alcohol, had samples collected from them, and their whole blood and their serum alcohol concentrations were compared. Those conversion factors are present in the protocols in use in the laboratory where I work, and they're also consistent with best practice recommendations or consensus body documents in the field that I work.
Now, you were asked on cross-examination about a number of different factors. Are those factors incorporated within the conversion factors and the published scientific literature supporting those conversion factors?
By basing it on studies with a large number of people, that's the intention, is to capture the interpersonal differences in different factors within that range that's used.
Now, if you know, how much in the elimination phase, as far as bladders are concerned, how much loss of alcohol is concerned in the elimination phase with reference to bladder loss?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question? I don't think I understood the
poor question.
Phrase.
Let me rephrase. So you were asked some questions on cross-examination about how frequently someone uses the restroom in the elimination phase, correct?
I believe I was, yes. Okay.
And do you have any idea from your training experience as far as how much alcohol is typically lost by an individual during the elimination phase through the bladder?
Objection.
Do you know that?
I do.
Okay, you can answer it.
Less than 5%. The vast majority of alcohol is eliminated from the body by an enzyme that breaks it down from alcohol into carbon dioxide and water. I can't remember exactly how much is generally eliminated, but I believe it's less than 5% of the total blood alcohol concentration.
Now, you were asked about whether or not the defendant had a drink after 12:45 a.m. Do you have any evidence that the defendant did, in fact, have any alcohol to drink after 12:45 a.m.?
Objection.
Sustained.
If there was a drink at approximately 1 a.m., what kind of impact would that have on your calculations?
It would depend on how much had been consumed. If any alcohol had been consumed, then it would adjust the calculations depending on that information.
And what I'm asking, Ms. Knowles, is if there is a slight differential in the time of incident or last drink, how much impact would that have on the range that you're able to calculate?
I'm not sure.
Now, you testified as far as the range being on the retrograde analysis being between a 0.14 and a 0.28, correct?
Yes, I did.
Are you aware of what the legal limit is in Massachusetts?
Objection.
Well, I'm going to sustain that, actually.
Why is there such a varying range?
Because there is such variation between individuals with their rates of elimination, the calculation used, both a sort of extreme low and extreme high rate of elimination, and because we don't know the individual's rate of elimination, that range is intentionally wide to ensure that the actual blood alcohol concentration lies somewhere between it. It's intending to account for a lot of the factors that we've been discussing. It's intentionally a wide range because there are so many unknown factors, and it was so much time that had elapsed between the time of interest and the time of collection.
And based on your calculations, as far as the 93 milligrams per deciliter, what does that convert to as far as the blood alcohol concentration for the defendant at 9:08 a.m. on January 29th?
93 milligrams per deciliter in serum alcohol concentration would convert to between 0.078 and 0.082 grams per cent.
And from your calculations and your retrograde analysis, what was the range that you were able to calculate for the defendant's blood alcohol concentration at 12:45 a.m. on January 29th?
Between 0.14 and 0.28 grams per cent.
And 0.14, 0.28, and every number in between is higher than 0.08. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Nothing further.
No further questions.
All right, Ms. Knowles, you are all set. Thank you very much. All right, Cornwell's next witness, please. Or whatever.
Cornwell calls Ryan Nagel.
And do you solemnly swear the evidence given in court and jury in the case now adhering to the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yes.
Thank you for your statement.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May I proceed?
Yes.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Could you please introduce yourself to the jury?
My name is Ryan Nagel.
How old are you?
I'm 32 years old.
What area of the city or the state do you live in?
I live in Canton, Massachusetts.
How long have you lived in Canton for?
32 years, my whole life.
You still live in Canton?
Yes, I do.
Do you work in the area?
I work in the city.
What do you do generally?
I do HVAC.
Do you have any sisters?
I do. I have one.
What's her name?
Juliana.
Is she older or younger than you?
She is younger.
I want you to take us back to January 29th, 2022. That evening on the 28th, leading into the 29th, do you remember where you were?
Yes, I do.
Where were you?
I was in a vehicle.
Okay. Before you were in the vehicle, were you out earlier that night on the 28th?
Yes, sir. I was at C.F. McCarthy's.
What's C.F. McCarthy's?
It is a local restaurant slash pub in the center of Canton.
Who were you at C.F. McCarthy's with?
My sister at the time, and then my friend Ricky and my ex-girlfriend Heather.
What were you doing at C.F. McCarthy's?
Just enjoying a night, having a few drinks.
When you said have a few drinks, did you have a few drinks?
I did, yes.
Do you remember how many drinks you had?
Not off the top of my head.
Do you remember whether the drinks you had, the alcohol drinks that you had, it affected your ability at all? Were you impaired in any way?
I wouldn't say impaired, but I only drank beer.
Okay. Do you feel like you had any type of effect from the alcohol?
I may have.
Were you driving?
No, I was not, sir.
Do you remember the times that you were at McCarthy?
Probably 8, 9 o'clock.
What time did you leave?
Probably right before midnight.
When you left McCarthy's right before midnight, did you have a plan that you were going to do something?
No, I did not.
Tell us, after you leave McCarthy's, where do you go?
I was going to go home, but my sister Julie texted me to be picked up.
When you were going to go home, tell us, when you leave McCarthy's, what kind of vehicle were you in?
I was in my friend Ricky's Ford pickup truck.
Who was driving?
Ricky.
Was anybody else with you too?
My ex-girlfriend, Heather.
Heather. You know Heather's last name?
Maxim.
Was she in the front or the back of the truck?
She was in the back seat.
So you three were in the truck and Ricky was driving?
Correct, sir.
You mentioned you were going to go home. Did you start to head towards your home?
Mr. Brennan, slow down a little bit for the court reporter, please.
Pardon me. You mentioned you were going to go home. Did you start heading towards your house?
Yes.
Do you remember what time you got the text from your sister?
Around midnight. I can't remember that far back.
You don't have a firm memory of it?
No, I do not, sir.
After you received the text from your sister, did your plan change?
Yes.
And what was the plan after you received the text from your sister?
To go pick her up.
Did you know where she was?
Yes, I did.
Where was she?
She was at her friend Brian's house.
Did you know the address?
Not off the top of my head, but I knew the street.
Did you know the house?
Yes.
Did you know her friend Brian?
Yes, I did.
What is his last name?
Albert.
Is he a senior or a junior?
He is a junior.
About how old is he?
I think 27, 28 years old.
Were you friends with Brian Albert Jr.?
Just through my sister.
Had you ever been to that house before inside the house?
No, I have not, sir.
Do you have any other purpose of going to that address other than to pick up your sister?
No, sir.
How long did it take you after you left to redirect and get to that address?
Probably roughly 5 to 7 minutes.
Do you know what time specifically you arrived at that address?
Probably a little before 12:30.
Is that a general guess?
Yes.
Did you look at your watch and note the time, or is this an estimate?
Just an estimate, sir.
So the estimate is you arrived around 12:30?
Correct.
When you approached the house, before you approached the house, is there a road that intersects Fairview?
Yes.
And what's the name of that road?
Give me a second. I can't think of the name.
Okay.
Are you
familiar with any roads in that area?
Yes, sir.
Are you familiar with the road Cedar Crest?
Yes, sir.
Had you driven on Cedar Crest before?
Yes, I have.
If you're driving on Cedar Crest, can you loop around like a circle on that road?
Yes.
At some point, do the two parts of that circle intersect with another road?
I believe so.
Okay. Is Fairview, from your knowledge, attached to Cedar Crest Road?
Yes.
As you were traveling, did you travel on Cedar Crest before you got to Fairview?
Yes.
Okay, I want to ask you some questions about right before you turn on, or Ricky turns on to Fairview. As you're driving down Cedar Crest before you turn on to Fairview, did you see anything?
I saw a vehicle coming at us. Not directly at us, but obviously traveling on the other side of the road.
Okay, and where was that vehicle traveling towards?
Us, and then they put their blinker on to take a right. To take a right.
That vehicle is going to take a right onto Fairview?
Correct, sir.
And your vehicle is coming in the opposite direction?
Correct.
Where was your vehicle going?
Taking a left onto Fairview.
Did you both meet at that intersection?
Yes, roughly around the same time.
Who turned onto Fairview first?
The other vehicle.
How did that happen?
I believe Ricky flashed his lights to let them go.
Did you see the other vehicle?
Yes.
Do you remember what kind of vehicle it was?
It was a black SUV.
When that car turned right onto Fairview, how long after did Ricky turn left onto Fairview?
Seconds.
When you came to that intersection and met that car, when Ricky blinked his lights, could you see inside that SUV?
Say that again?
When you came to the intersection at Fairview,
mm-hmm.
and you said that the driver of your truck, Ricky, blinked his lights, could you see anything inside the SUV?
I wasn't really looking.
After that SUV turned right onto Fairview and Ricky turned left onto Fairview, who was in front of who?
The other vehicle was in front of us.
Was the other vehicle in front of you the entire time you saw it?
Yes, sir.
Did Ricky ever drive and park in front of that vehicle?
No, we were behind them.
Always behind it?
Always.
When Ricky pulled up to Fairview, where did he stop?
Right in front of the driveway of the Albert's house.
You were in the front passenger side of the truck?
Correct, sir.
If you looked directly outside that window, what would you have seen?
The driveway and the house.
The other vehicle, did it stop at the driveway?
No, it was probably like a car length in front of us.
So it was in front of you?
Correct, sir.
Did you ever see that car stop at the driveway?
At the driveway, I don't recall.
Okay. Did you wait before you got to Fairview, or did Ricky drive directly to Fairview after he took the left?
Well, he turned the left onto Fairview.
Okay. Did he wait or did he drive directly to Fairview?
I drove directly there.
Okay. The car in front of you, did you ever see it move behind you in front of the driveway?
Behind, it was in front of me the whole time.
And so I'll ask the question again. Did you ever see that SUV stop at the foot of the driveway?
No, but I did see the brake lights. It looked like it moved, but it wasn't. So the brake lights are on. They released them and then stopped again. So it probably moved another car length up.
How many times did you see the brake lights on?
Just once, sir.
After you stopped at the foot of the driveway, did you keep your attention on that SUV?
Not really, no. I was more concerned about my sister.
So you weren't studying it?
No.
Were you making any notes or trying to mark its direction of travel?
No.
But you do know, or do you have any doubt that it was in front of you the entire time?
Yes, it was.
When you pulled to the driveway, did you go in to see your sister?
No.
What did you do?
I texted her saying, we're here. And she came out, opened up the door. She looks at me and Rick and said, hey, do you guys want to come in? For a drink or whatever. And I looked at him, looked in the back seat, asked Heather. We said, no, we're all set. We're going to go home. And so she decided to stay.
So the idea was to give her a ride home. You did not give her a ride home?
Correct. We did not.
Let me ask you some questions. Before your sister came out of the house, do you remember how long you waited for her?
Pretty roughly 2 minutes.
Okay. In its entirety, how long was that truck parked at the foot of the driveway in front of Fairview?
Probably closer to five minutes, sir.
Is that an estimate?
Yes, I'm just guessing from what I can remember.
Did you mark the time in any way? Look at your watch in any way?
No, sir.
That's your general memory?
You're just roughly trying to remember.
When you looked up at the house, did you see there were more than one door?
Yes, there were two doors. Yes.
Do you remember what door your sister came out of?
She came out of the side door, which is to the left of the garage.
Did you watch her?
Yes.
Where did she walk, from where to where?
She walked out of that door down the driveway towards us.
When she reached you, how did you have a conversation with her if you were in the truck?
I opened the door, my passenger door.
As you were speaking with her, were you watching anything else, or was your attention directed to your sister?
Nope, just on my sister.
At some point after your sister turned to go inside, did you wait for her, or did you leave right away? Or did Ricky leave right away?
We waited for her to get back into the house.
At any point before your sister went back in the house, did you see any lights, like dome lighting, come on inside that SUV?
Yes, I did, sir.
Before or after your sister went in the house?
Roughly like as she was getting in the door. So.
Before you ended your conversation with her, did you see the dome light go on in that SUV?
Say that again, sorry.
Before your sister left the driveway, mm-hmm. Did you see any dome light on in the SUV?
No, I wasn't looking.
Your sister began to walk back to the house. What was your direction? What was your attention focused on?
Mainly on her. We were pulling away from the driveway and kind of just glancing back over at Julia to make sure she got in.
When your sister went back up the driveway to go in the house, when was the next point you had any chance to see the SUV?
When we were passing it.
When you were passing the SUV, where was it located in relation to the house, flagpole?
Directly in front of the house.
Okay. Was it anywhere near the flagpole as you drove by?
Probably like a car length from that.
A car length from the flagpole?
Yes, give or take.
Okay. Is that the middle, right, or left side of the house?
That would be towards the left side of the house.
As you drove by that SUV, what was your primary focus?
My sister, sir. Like watching her get in.
You were being attentive to her getting in?
Correct, sir.
As you watched her get in, did you glance or see anything else in your vision as you were watching your sister go into the house?
I saw that there was a woman in the driver's seat of the black SUV in front of me, sitting there with her hands on the steering wheel at 10-2.
Did you get a good enough look that you would remember who that person was, or was it too brief to identify the person?
It was too brief, sir.
You saw the person in the SUV with the hands on the wheel. How did you see them inside the car?
Their dome light was on.
Do you know how a dome light comes on in a vehicle?
Yes, sir. Either you press it yourself or if there's a door open.
When you had the glance or the glimpse of the woman in that SUV holding the whale, you said 10 and 2?
Correct, sir.
Could you describe for us what that means?
Just like a clock, just the hands on the clock, like 10 and 2.
I was just waiting for the siren, Your Honor. If I could show Exhibit 3 to Mr. Nagel. Sir, do you recognize that address?
Yes, sir.
And what is that address?
It is 34 Fairview Road.
Do you recognize the flagpole?
Yes, I do, sir.
Thank you. When you drove by and you said you saw a woman sitting in the front and the dome light was on, did you see anybody else in the car?
No, sir.
Were you looking for anybody?
No, sir.
Could there have been somebody else in the vehicle at that time?
There could have been, yes.
Could there have been someone standing outside the door?
Yes, there could have been.
When you saw the person, were you studying the person?
No.
How long of a time did you have to take a glimpse of that person?
5-10 seconds, maybe.
Okay. Now, I want to ask you some questions about the entire time you were parked at the foot of the driveway until the point that you left Fairview. From when you first stopped at the driveway at Fairview until the point that you left and were no longer in front of that property, did you ever see any person get out of that SUV that was in front of you?
No, I did not, sir.
Did you ever see anybody, any man, ever cross the front yard towards that home?
No, I did not, sir.
Did you ever see any man ever enter or stand in that front door?
No, I did not, sir.
Did you ever see anybody walk across the front yard to the side door?
Objection.
I'll allow it.
No, I did not, sir.
Did you ever see anybody enter that side door other than your sister?
No, I did not, sir.
As you were parked at the driveway the entire time, that generally 5-minute time, did you ever see anybody get out of the SUV and walk down the street towards the driveway?
Objection.
I'll allow it.
No, I did not, sir.
Did you ever see anybody walk past your truck and up the driveway?
No, I did not, sir.
Did you ever see any person other than your sister outside of those vehicles the entire time that you were at Fairview?
Objection.
I'll allow it.
No, I did not, sir.
I have no further questions. Thank you.
Mr. Iannetti?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
You testified about having seen a black SUV before the vehicle that you were in entered Fairview Road at around midnight on January 29th of 2022, correct?
Correct, sir.
Objection, that's not facts and evidence.
That's okay. The witness's answer is what matters. Is that right?
Yes.
You first saw that black SUV when it was coming toward your vehicle when you were on Cedar Crest, correct?
Can you repeat the question?
I'm sorry. Let me repeat that because of the siren. You first saw that black SUV when it was coming toward the vehicle that you were in on Cedar Crest, correct?
Correct, sir.
Your friend Ricky D'Antono was driving
D'Antono.
At that time?
D'Antono, sorry.
D'Antono?
Yes.
He was driving at the time?
Correct, sir.
Mr. Iannetti, thank you.
Yes.
All right, go ahead.
Thank you. Ricky doesn't drink, correct?
He does.
He wasn't drinking that night?
He may have had one or two.
Okay. But he appeared to be driving safely?
Yes, sir.
And you also had a chance to observe the black SUV at that time as it was facing you, correct?
Yes.
When you saw it on Cedar Crest, you didn't know who was driving it at that time, correct?
No, I couldn't see.
But your observations of the black SUV at that time were that whoever was driving it, that person appeared to be driving safely as well, correct?
Yeah, I would assume so, yes.
One of the first things you noticed about the black SUV was that it was in front of you on Cedar Crest, and both Ricky's F-150 and the black SUV were basically converging on Fairview at about the same time?
Yes, sir.
The black SUV appeared to be going at a safe speed?
Yes.
It appeared to be properly staying within its lane?
Yes, I would say, yeah.
And when it was time for Ricky to take a left onto Fairview, he actually put on his left blinker, or not left blinker, but both his blinker, flashed his lights to signal that it was okay for the black SUV to cut in front of it, correct?
Yes, sir.
And he actually did have his left blinker on at that time, correct? Prior
yes,
to
sir.
Doing that? And the black SUV had its right directional on, correct?
Yes, sir.
And when both cars have their directionals on, indicating they're going down the same street, the black SUV did not suddenly cut in front of Ricky's vehicle until the flashing of the lights, correct?
Correct, sir.
Both cars appeared to be operating safely, correct?
Correct, sir.
And once the lights were flashed, there was nothing about the operation of that black SUV that told you that the driver appeared to be confused about what the flashing meant, correct?
Correct, sir.
The black SUV didn't hesitate at that time. It just proceeded onto Fairview in front of you, correct?
Correct, sir.
And it did so in a safe manner?
Correct, sir.
And the black SUV, in that sense, got ahead of Ricky's vehicle, correct?
Correct, sir.
And once you got to the Albert home, you noticed that the black SUV was parked outside the Albert home, correct?
Correct, sir.
And at that time, the snow had not yet started sticking to the pavement, correct?
Correct, sir.
You could see the pavement in both the driveway and the street?
Correct, sir.
You could also see the grass on the lawn?
Yeah, for the most part, yes.
The snow was only just starting to accumulate on the grass, correct?
Correct, sir.
And with that little snow on the ground, you saw no tire marks behind the SUV, correct?
No, sir.
In fact, you saw no tire marks in the street at all?
Correct, sir.
May I have the map displayed, please?
Is it in evidence already, Ms. Giannetti?
May we approach?
Okay. Get some water.
Is that okay? Thank you. Here she is.
Okay.
Can you enlarge that, please?
Yeah, actually, yeah. If, you know what? If we could enlarge it so you don't have to show Chapman, just show Cedar Crest and Fairview and maybe pull it in a little bit to the right now, the other way. See if that works. Okay, that's much better. I don't know how your eyes are, sir, but are you able to read the street names on...
To be honest, no, I can't see that far.
Okay, if I suggested to you that the top street horizontal going down from right to left was Cedar Crest, and that the street where the red arrow is Fairview Road. Would that orient you?
Yes, sir.
And would it be fair to say that before you actually were coming down Cedar Crest Road as you look at this map from right to left, correct?
Correct, sir.
And in that sense, you were traveling west on Cedar Crest, correct?
Yes.
You turned south onto Fairview, correct?
Correct, sir.
And you were still facing south when you parked in front of 34 Fairview, correct?
Correct, sir.
And that means that when you're sitting in that vehicle on Fairview Road, if you were going to walk to the house or look to the house, you would be walking or looking in a westerly direction, correct?
From where I was in the vehicle?
Yes.
Yes, so to my right, yes.
Okay, and so when you were looking for Julie to come out, you were looking to the west?
Correct, sir.
All right, Your Honor, I would offer that into evidence. We're going to have a hard copy printed out for the jury after this examination.
Okay, so we need something for the court reporter to...
Sure. All right. Mark. We will take care of that. Thank you.
Right.
And you can put the lights back on and you can take that down.
All right. So it will be. Go ahead, madam.
The exhibit will be 49.
49. Thank you. And sir, it took a couple of minutes for Julie to come out after Ricky parked the F-150?
Yes.
When she did come out, you opened the door and you had a conversation with her while she stood between the door and the passenger compartment of the F-150?
Repeat that, please. Sorry.
Sure. When she did come out, she approached the F-150, correct?
Correct, sir.
And you were in the passenger's compartment, right?
Correct, sir.
You opened up the passenger's door, correct?
Correct, sir.
And she sort of, you stayed in the vehicle, right?
Correct, I never left.
And she came sort of into like the crook of the door and the passenger's compartment?
Yes, sir.
All right. You had a chance, how close did she get to you?
I could have popped her on her nose if I wanted to.
Okay. And you had a chance to observe her and size her up, correct?
Correct, sir.
You spoke to her for maybe about 5 minutes was your best estimate?
I wouldn't say five. I'd probably say two or three.
Okay. But in any case, you did have a chance to observe her, correct?
Yes, sir.
And it was clear to you that your sister Julie seemed like she had had a few drinks, correct?
It was 12:30 in the morning, so yes.
And she called you for a ride, right?
Yes, she knew that Ricky was driving.
Right. And when you arrived there, there was a discussion about whether she'd actually take the ride, right?
Correct, sir.
If she was just going to come out and take the ride, there would have been no need for the conversation, correct?
Correct.
But do you recall previously testifying that you were out talking to Julie for over 5 minutes?
I would not say over 5 minutes, no.
Okay. Do you deny that it was about 5 minutes?
Objection.
I'll allow it. Do you deny it was about 5 minutes?
It could have been.
Okay.
I'm not.
Fair enough. And you talked with her about whether she wanted to go in the truck and leave with you, correct?
Correct, sir.
You also talked about whether instead you, Heather, and Ricky would go into the house to join the gathering there.
Correct, sir.
There was a back and forth that you really thought was unnecessary, correct?
I wouldn't say it'd be unnecessary. It's just a common question if you want to come in and have a drink.
You have testified in the past that Julie can be kind of a pain in the ass, correct?
I mean, all siblings can be, yeah.
In any case, Julie decides to go back inside and you decide to leave, correct?
Correct, sir.
Ricky did not speed up the street at that time?
No.
He just gradually pulled out?
Correct, sir.
His direction of travel took him right past the black SUV that was now in front of you, correct?
Correct, sir.
He passed the black SUV on the left, correct?
Correct, sir.
And you were in the front passenger seat at that time still, correct?
Correct, sir.
So you were closest to the black SUV of the people that were in your vehicle as you passed it, correct?
Correct, sir, yes.
And you were closest to the driver's side of the black SUV, correct?
Correct, sir.
You noticed that the interior dome light was on, correct?
That is correct, sir.
That lit up the whole front compartment of the SUV, did it not?
Yes.
It lit up the driver's seat and the passenger's seat, correct?
All I could see was the driver at the time, sir.
Understood. But the light wasn't just shining just on the driver. It wasn't pointed at the driver.
I would say they were both lights that go down to both seats, correct? We're on?
Yes. Okay. Yes. So you could see both seats in the front driver's compartment.
I couldn't
correct?
See past the woman.
Well, you only saw one.
I only saw a woman. Sorry. Sorry to interrupt you. Yes.
No problem. It allowed you to see into that front compartment.
Yes.
All right. And you saw one person inside the car at that time.
Correct, sir.
It was a woman with long hair in the driver's seat, correct?
Correct, sir.
And she looked like she was alone.
Yes.
You didn't see anybody else in the SUV?
No, I did not, sir.
You certainly didn't see a 6'1" man in the SUV in the passenger seat, correct?
Correct, sir.
In fact, you saw that the passenger seat was empty.
Correct.
There's more live courtroom coverage coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a second.
from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
There's a time and a place for Filet-O-Fish, but breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
There's a time and a place for Filet-O-Fish, but breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
There's a time and a place for Filet-O-Fish, but breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
There's a time and a place for Filet-O-Fish, but breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
not all meals are created equal. For instance, breakfast has the spicy egg McMuffin for a limited time, and lunch doesn't. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 million protection package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
There's a time and a place for filet of fish, but breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 million protection package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Does Friendly have a taste? If it does, it's probably like Hello's peppermint-flavored anti-plaque and whitening toothpaste. Brush away plaque, show tartar who's boss, and remove surface stains to naturally whiten. Hello's thoughtful and flavor-forward products make brushing your teeth feel like a confetti-filled bathroom dance party. So say hello to Hello with the always cruelty-free, never tested on animals toothpaste that's made to spread smiles. Visit HelloProducts.com and let Hello add some everyday yay into your life.
Are you ready for more independence as a financial advisor? Are you ready for more growth and control over your future? The Independent Registered Investment Advisor, or RIA, model might be right for you. There are many paths to independence, and Schwab Advisor Services has helped thousands of advisors make the move with confidence, from defining your vision to successfully transitioning your clients. Schwab helps you build your roadmap to independence. To find your path, start with Schwab Advisor Services at advisorservices.schwab.com/path today.